The Public Commission on the Oregon Legislature Human Resources Committee will come to order. We're in hearing room F, and it's 1 o'clock. If you don't mind, I think we'll have a short conversation about proposal number 38 and proposal number 145. You should have in your packet an email that I received from Roger Martin that urged us not to take the Indian Commission out of the legislature. And if I remember from our last meeting, that was pretty much the what the rest of the committee felt was a good idea, just to drop this from our agenda. But I think we need a motion to do that. Is there any conversation? Commissioner Veras.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that Proposal 38 be removed from our agenda.
It's been moved by Commissioner Barrows, seconded by Commissioner Bernstein, that we remove item 38, removal of the Commission on Indian Services from the legislative branch, from our agenda, and report that to the, I assume, to the full commission.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we'll just notify the commission that you're recommending that we take no further action on Proposal 38.
You could have read that either way.
Okay.
Yep. It made me very nervous.
Okay. Mr. Chairman. To your motion?
Mr. Chairman, I think the commission has served the Native American tribes of this state very well where it is currently located, and it has a presence in the capital and makes it more important, I think, in the minds of legislators than it would be if it was buried off in some corner of Das or wherever. I do need, Mr. Chairman, if I may, to declare a potential conflict of interest. I do, in my lobbying practice, have as one of my clients confederated tribe to Grand Ronde.
Okay. Is there any discussion on the matter?
Yes, I'd like to say that if we remove it from this agenda, it goes back to the bigger.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Commissioner Pigsley, what we're doing at this time is the committee's making the recommendation that we take no further action on this proposal. Then at the full commission meeting, the full commission will take a similar vote on a similar motion.
Okay. Is there any further discussion? All right, those in favor of the motion, signal by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The ayes have it, and we will report that to the full commission. Now let's move to 145. I misunderstood at the very beginning of our discussions at our last meeting. I thought this was about legislative boards and commissions, and it appears in the discussion it was for all boards and commissions statewide. And I think it was what I was hearing the commissioner say was that we didn't feel like it was our purview to go into all it would take to look at such a broad issue. So, is there any discussion? Similar motions?
Mr. Chairman, I would so move that Proposal 145 be deleted from our task list.
Very good. Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved by Commissioner Barrow, seconded by Commissioner Pigsley, that we remove item 145 from our task list. Report that to the full commission. Any discussion? Then hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? The ayes have it. We will report that to the full commission. Now, having arrived in our midst, the famous former legislative administrator, Mr. Greenfield, I asked if he would come and talk about his experience as legislative administrator, and he did speak to one of the other committees, and I thought maybe it would be a good idea if he gave a similar discussion for this, or had a similar discussion with our committee. Mr. Greenfield, welcome.
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Mike Greenfield. I'm retired.
having headed nearly every department in state government, sorted 25-year career just ahead of the whatever was after me. It's a pleasure to be here with you this afternoon, and if I understand correctly, you'd like a little bit of a recap of my experience during a period of time when staffing for committees was nonpartisan. I can speak to that and then answer any questions that you have. When I was hired as legislative administrator by a committee upon which sat the Honorable Jim Hill and other luminaries, the decision was made by the then Speaker and President to create a committee office to eliminate the legislative research office, move those resources to staff committees, and have those committee staff be managed by the legislative administrator and be nonpartisan. And so we went through a process where we rehired many of the committee staff as a nonpartisan, did not hire some of the existing committee staff, and then managed the operations from the office of the legislative administrator. What that meant was that we had to set standards, clear standards. We had to talk with committee chairs and others to make sure that staff were completing their tasks the way they were supposed to. The staffing worked, I thought, fairly well. I think probably the biggest beneficiary of nonpartisan staffing was Larry Campbell, who came in when the majority changed from Democrat to Republican, and he was a new speaker, and his committee chairs and committees were able to come in and hit the ground running without a bunch of new staff and much disruption. I think the Democrats felt disrupted, but they were able to operate the committee, I think, in a fairly orderly way, and there was a good transition there. And so, needless to say, of course, I don't think that's currently the situation. Currently, it would be my view that we've gone back to partisan staffing for committees, and I can speak a little bit about that, or I can give you more detail. I don't want to go on and on about it. If anybody has any question about that particular period of time, which it would have been 1986 is when I came in. I think the 87 session was when we introduced nonpartisan staffing for committees. And it was because Speaker Katz and President Kitzhaber were willing to give that news to the committee chairs use their authority through the Legislative Administration Committee to staff in that manner.
Are there any questions from the committee? I heard you say two things, clear standards, you didn't say the word accountability, but that's what I heard. Were those the two principal things that you instituted by changing the way the committees were staffed?
Well, I think that underlying the idea of nonpartisan staffing was a choice between two competing values. One value would say that we're in a winner-take-all situation, that if you're the majority party, then you get to control all of the variables, and the staff work on behalf of the majority members and create reports that are acceptable to the majority members. And in general, if you are a constituent of a majority member in the legislature, you get pretty good representation in this body, and if you're a constituent of a minority member, you don't. A legislator can't ask for research and get it as quickly, can't be assured that reports and information that comes before the committee doesn't have a slant to it. And I think the value that was selected by the Speaker and President at that time was that we were going to have a level field in terms of the process, that in fact the staff of committees professionally really had no interest in the outcome of the process. That was the members' business, and that the outcome of the process was something the members would vote on, and that the staff for the committee were going to provide a process and information that were balanced and informed not only the members of the legislature but their constituents and the press, and that was the value that they chose. And so our job was to try to hire people who could deliver that kind of service, that didn't walk into the building with a set of attitudes about what the outcome of the legislative process ought to be, and then to monitor and evaluate the work they did, and certainly following directions from the chair about which bills would be heard and how the process was going to work, but in providing resources, research, information, and support for every member of each committee, not just those members that happen to be in the majority, and who disappeared in the process and allowed the members to be exposed to the information that they needed, allowed people from the outside access to the legislative process, and a whole other varieties of variables that we developed mechanisms to randomly sample how they were doing and, if necessary, correct how they did their work. And so we gave regular feedback to the committee administrators and the committee assistants to assist them in being completely nonpartisan. I instituted a rule, for example, that committee staff could not accept anything of any kind from anybody. I made them send back their Virginia Slim calendars that they got, tiny ones, because I didn't know where the line was between a small calendar and a box seat at a Blazer game. Of course, Blazer games were more important at that during that era. And since I couldn't figure out where that line was, we said nothing, and nobody was going to accept anything. During that time, we made, particularly during the interim, we instituted consistent formats, meeting summaries during the interim session, where I think in the past, the interim session committees ran as just based on who happened to be staffing them, who the chair was. And so we instituted a lot of changes that made the legislature, I think, a little more professional. So we measured against those standards.
Thank you. Is there anything else you'd like to?
Well, I would just comment that, you know, I think that given the era that we're in, given the unwillingness, certainly, of interest groups to compromise, given the polarization over very difficult issues, it's certainly easy to understand how if you get a majority in the legislature, you're under a lot of pressure to basically deliver without yourself compromising or and controlling every variable that you can control. And it's understandable, but I think it's kind of unforgivable. I think it's time, and certainly this group can suggest that this institution is here for every member of the legislature, that all members should have access to resources, that staff work should be nonpartisan. After all, the majority party gets to appoint the chairs of the committees, gets the most vote on the committees, and gets the most votes on the floor of that House. That ought to be enough. The rest of it ought to be pretty even-handed and let the ideas compete rather than simply having a winner-take-all approach. At least that would be my thought.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Greenfield?
I have a quick one, if I may.
Mr. Barrett.
Mike, used to one session in my 51 years in this building, the House Minority Caucus got to pick the minority members of the committees, and that was quickly done away with. Do you have any? Would that fall under the heading of it's out? They got enough, and they don't need to have that too, the majority.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Barrows. If this institution is here for the voters, if those who hold positions in this institution have borrowed those positions and are supposed to be in them and work on behalf of the people that they represent, then the more that we can design the system to get people to work together to reach compromises, to not believe that you can come flying into the legislative process with a very clear and structured and one-way idea and think you're going to walk out the door with that idea intact, because that's not democracy. The more we can militate in that direction, the more I would be in favor of it. And so I think that makes sense. It also, I think, if I were in the majority and I knew bad things were going to happen in this compromise process, I'd want to give as much credit as possible to the other side. That would help.
Thank you.
I remember once, this was, I think, after, I'm not sure whether you were still here or not, but I remember early to mid-90s when we had a committee staffer who had a problem with the process, and we had to literally bring staff from all the other committees to clean it up because he wasn't able to get the paperwork going through correctly. I'm not sure how that happens in a professional organization that teaches its staff how to operate and then holds them accountable for that.
Well, and the idea of nonpartisan staffing began being chipped away rather early. I think as I left the Legislative Assembly, I can recall at least one staff member sitting on the stairs in front of the House sobbing because a bill that she was completely in favor of and done moved heaven and earth had been defeated on the floor. That's just inappropriate. And in some respects, with members coming in and having to keep their home lives together, having to keep constituents happy, having to track I don't know how many thousands of bills, having to live away from home, having to run campaigns, staff positions, they become extremely dependent on those staff, and it is very important that those staff be even-handed and not foul up a process, or certainly not impose their own wishes, because a staff person that's really dedicated and focused can really probably move things that members don't have the time to move. And so somebody needs to be keeping an eye on that, and it needs to be against some pretty stringent standards.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. I guess we're going to come back to the records retention issue, and since we have the legislative administrator and his human resources guru here. I thought we'd have a discussion about, following up Mike's comments, that we might have a discussion about how staff are hired, how they're who they report to, how they're fired if necessary, how they're held accountable. What kind of standards are in place to assure that they do their job correctly and on time? And what kind of what I consider professional human resources approaches are taking place in the legislature these days? Dave?
Mr. Chair,
did I sit you up?
I should have written those down. That was a longer list than I was expecting. For the record, I'm Dave Henderson, the legislative administrator, and I appreciate Mr. Greenfield's comments. I think that let me start by saying the recruitment process that we have established and that we've used for the past several sessions, we believe works quite well at recognizing the political realities of the environment that we exist in, and at the same time tries to find the most talented and capable people to do the job. And if you'd like me to expand on that, I can tell you that what we do is for committee staff, and I'm speaking now about the committee administrators, we hire about 20 committee assistants or so every session, but I think it's the committee administrator position that is of the most interest to people. We conduct an open recruitment starting in September of every even-numbered year, and we gather applicants, probably around 200 applicants every 2 years for the positions that we're going to hire. We typically will hire somewhere around 10 or 12 session committee administrators, probably about a dozen, to complement the 8 continuing committee administrators who are here on a continuous basis. Through the process of that recruitment, we then take the applicants following the election, and we go to each of the 4 caucus offices and say, who would you like to interview? We'll screen the applicants to say these meet the minimum qualifications for the position, these don't. But we recognize that there may be somebody in the don't meet the minimums that maybe somebody is interested in having us interview. So working with the caucus offices, we'll establish a list of candidates to interview for the 12 positions that we hire for. We then put together an interview panel, and it consists of myself, the committee services manager, Lori Christopher, the human resources manager, and then a representative of each of the four caucuses. So it's a 7-member interview panel. We then schedule the interviews and actually probably interview 45 or 50 people in the course of making the decisions for hiring for the administrator positions. Through that process, each side gets input, the Democrats, the Republicans, the House, the Senate. The committee services manager is the person responsible for managing the day-to-day activities of the committee staff, and that person has input in the process. I have input in the process. Our HR manager has input. And we have been fairly successful at narrowing the list down to candidates that we are pretty much in agreement on as to the best qualified people to serve. At that point, we will make recommendations to the presiding officers in each house on staff people to be hired for each of the committees. And we've had the support of the presiding officers in pursuing those appointments for the most part. And we'll then go to the committee chairs and say, we've got a person that we want you to talk with. We think this person would be a good administrator for your committee. And there have been a couple of instances in the past few sessions where the committee chair has said, this isn't going to work for whatever reason, and we've made some adjustments and come up with some other folks. But for the most part, what we find is that when the chair talks with the applicant that we've identified as probably the best qualified to work on that committee, they're generally pretty happy, and we then hire those folks. And it's a time-consuming process. We're actually making job offers as late as the week that session starts because of the time that it takes to work with the members, go through the 50 interviews, and go through that entire process. We conduct a very extensive training for those staff people. It consists of about a day and a half of general training that all legislative staff people get at the start of a session. And then there's about 3.5 days of specific training to the position, whether it be committee assistant or committee administrator. We monitor the activities of the staff throughout the session. What they are told is that they work at the direction of the chair of the committee, but they work for all of the members of the committee, minority, majority, everyone. So we believe we make every effort to so that they will understand that and that they do a good job of recognizing that. When we do encounter situations that it may appear that a person is perhaps leaning too much one direction or the other, we'll have a counseling session with that employee and talk through it with them and correct that behavior. And if I cannot recall an instance where we have had to make any changes as far as letting anyone go in the last several sessions for being overly partisan one way or another. The work is reviewed by the committee services manager, who completes a performance evaluation at the conclusion of session. Unfortunately, at the end of the 2005 session, our manager left for another position, and we did not complete that process. And that's unfortunate because it's helpful in the future should somebody wish to come back to be able to refer to those evaluations to see what kind of job the person did.
Are there questions?
I have a couple.
Commissioner Bernstein.
Of the 12 people that you hire that are more or less not permanent, how many of the are there many of those that are returnees?
Chair Latimer, Commissioner Bernstein, there are typically probably one or two every session who have been here before and come back, and they may work two sessions or three sessions and then go on. There's a gentleman who was a retiree who had been an agency head, a state agency head for many years, and he came in and worked as an administrator for 3 or 4 sessions, folks of that nature. So there usually are one or two that are returning.
I mean, you said that on occasion, or at least you will give members an opportunity to look at people who, in the screening process, are determined not to be qualified. What do you, I guess I'm not sure what you mean by or don't meet the threshold qualifications. I'm not sure.
Commissioner Bernstein, the minimum qualification, I don't know them right off the top of my head, but you know, it's a bachelor's degree and I think it's 2 years experience in a policy related field or something to that effect. So we've established those, but we recognize that there are candidates out there who are perfectly capable of doing the job who for whatever reason don't meet those minimums. And a lot of times those will be people who have been in contact with the various caucus offices for whatever reason, and somebody in the caucus office will say, I know this person would be good for the job. They're, you know, 6 hours short of having their bachelor's degree, or they've got only a year and a half of policy experience. They don't meet the minimums in that way, but we ought to take a look at them. And we recognize that the recruiting process, as much as we try to make it objective, there are subjective things about it. You know, there are applicants who are better at filling out the application than others, and should they be rewarded? There are applicants who are better in interviews than others. Should they be rewarded? So while we have standards, we recognize that there needs to be some flexibility in those.
Other questions?
It's just a quick one. Thank you. Is there any partisanship that has shown up in this process of going changing the standards?
Chair Latimer, Commissioner Hill, I don't think you can be in a political environment and not have some partisanship show up. There are instances where hiring decisions have been made that have been viewed as partisan. There have been failed candidates who were potentially or perhaps legislative candidates who did not succeed, who have come in and applied and been hired. We've tried to avoid that, quite frankly, as much as we can, because we think it contributes to a difficult situation. But there are times when a committee chair says, this is the person I want, and if the presiding officer says, that's the person my chair wants, and I want that that chair to have that person, we'll make that hire.
And has that caused problems?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Hill, I believe that it has caused perception problems, and I think that's been clear when you talk with some of the minority offices at times that will feel that perhaps that person is leaning one way or another. I cannot say that I have seen specific actions by some of those people that would lead me to believe that it truly is a problem. But in this business, if you perceive that there's a problem, there's a problem. So it has caused problems, yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Help me understand something. It's my understanding that someone with years of experience in a particular subject matter was moved to a different committee, I don't know, his last session or session before, to a subject matter that person didn't really know a whole lot about. Why would we do that?
Chair Latimer, what we encounter is that we've got 8 very talented continuing committee administrators, all of whom have strengths in specific issue areas. Members will meet an administrator perhaps one session, and that administrator will do a good job working with them on a certain committee. And then you come back the next session, and that member is now chair of a committee that has a different jurisdiction, totally unrelated. But that member had such a good personal relationship with that staff person that they say, I want that person working for me. And the skills that are critical to doing the job of committee administrator, we believe, are the administration of the committee, the flow of the paperwork, the working with the chair, much more so than having expertise in an issue area. They can go to colleagues. It's helpful to have the expertise, but there are other colleagues around that they can go to. There are sources in the agencies, among the lobby community, that they can go to for that expertise. So if a chair has a particularly strong personal relationship with a staff person, we'll work with the chair to meet their needs. We had an example this last session where Janet Adkins, one of our longtime committee administrators, has developed quite a bit of expertise in the transportation field. In the 2003 session, she staffed the Transportation Committee for Representative Brown. In 2005, Representative Brown was chairing a different committee that was a business committee, and he wanted Janet because he knew of her skill. And we wanted to meet the chair's needs. So we felt, rather than rely on her expertise in the transportation field, her relationship and her skill, and we knew that the business committee was going to be one of the busiest in the House, we thought that's where her skills were best used. So those are the kinds of things that drive those decisions.
So help me understand something then. It sounds to me like what you're saying, that there's a need for administrative skills on the committees, and having staffed them, I know a little bit about that. But there's also a need for expertise in the subject matter for those committees. Would there be a better process to have a couple people staffing the committee, one with the administrative skills and one with the subject matter skills?
Mr. Chair, in fact, what we are looking at right now is we've got a model that is used in the judiciary committees, which is a little bit different from the rest of the committees, where they tend to work more as a group administering all of the judiciary committees. There's civil and criminal in the House, civil and criminal in the Senate, and rather than have a staff person who is solely responsible for one of those committees, there are four staff people who really, as a team, work with all four committees. And we're looking at taking a similar approach in the 07 session. We haven't fleshed out all of the details yet. And in fact, I'm springing this on the world right now, and there are people out there who are watching who are going, I had no idea you were thinking about doing that. So, but certainly that is an approach that we could look at taking. There was the old research office, which I think existed so that you had people who were solely there for issue expertise and research in areas, and they didn't staff committees. That is an approach that could be taken. I don't know that that would be necessary, but yes, you could do an approach on committees like you're describing.
I think my experience, you have the Ways and Means Committee staff. You wouldn't hire someone there who didn't have public finance experience or knowledge. You have the Revenue Committee staff. You wouldn't hire somebody there that didn't know anything about taxation, I would think, or was at least an economist. Legislative Council, you probably, although I have always argued with legislative councils across the country that you don't have to be a lawyer to draft legislation, but you're probably going to want legal expertise in a legislative council office. And it seems to me that the Transportation Committee, the Education Committee, the Human Resources Committee all need subject matter expertise to help them. These issues are becoming very, very complex. And I would think that the committees would be well served to have expertise right there with them to help them with those issues. But that's my predilection. So I don't know. The issue then becomes money and how you pay for that kind of expertise. I'm curious about your you talked about people meeting minimum qualifications, and other than a bachelor degree, I didn't hear any other minimum qualifications.
I'm going to ask my HR manager to help bail me out on that one. I don't recall the minimums for session committee administrators.
And I think that's...
You want to come up to the...
If you maybe...
You want to tell us who you are?
Chair Latimer.
Ms. Christopher?
If you could, if you maybe could go on to one of the other subjects.
She won't tell you who she is, so I'll tell you who she is. She's Lori Christopher.
I'm sorry, Lori Christopher, Human Resources Manager. I'm sorry. Maybe if I could run back to the office, I'll get session. They're different from the continuing committee administrator positions, and we hire every 2 years, so I'm just not sure what the differences are. I'd rather be accurate. So if you'd let me run and do that, maybe you could be talking about one of the other issues that you have us here for today, and then I'll be back in just a minute with the accurate answer for you. Okay?
Thank you. Now, where were we? Are there any questions today?
Yeah, You know, in the instance where a chair wants a specific person, and you know they work together in it, the one you I think you described earlier, do you even bother to advertise in that situation?
Chair Latimer, Commissioner Bernstein, we don't advertise in specific issue areas. It's a general recruitment for all areas of expertise, and we may list that we're looking for people with natural resource and education and transportation or a variety, but we don't go in with any expectation. We will ask our candidates, do you have an issue area that you would like to work in? And some of them will say, I will only work in land use. If you don't want me for land use, I don't want to be here. And we will factor that in. There are others who will say, I've been in education for 15 years, but I'd be happy to do any of these other areas. So it's a pretty broad recruitment.
So it's a combination of self-sorting and then your sorting based on the experience level of the individuals and the pool.
That's correct.
One of the big issues you had last session was over Measure 37, and land use policy in Oregon is very, very complex. It would seem pretty important to have someone who knew and understood land use law and policy in Oregon. Were you able to staff with that kind of expertise?
Mr. Chair, we were fortunate that the staff person for one of the committees that dealt with land use matters was a previous city planner, so he had an extensive background in land use planning. The other committee that dealt with that issue, the chair chose to go with a candidate who did not have that level of expertise. But that staff person did a perfectly adequate job for the chair. The chair was pleased with the work of the staff person.
Was the rest of the committee pleased?
Mr. Chair, to my knowledge, the rest of the committee was pleased. There was one issue that came up at one time where that person... I was told maybe getting a little far out on something, and I went and talked with him, and he assured me that he would make sure that he didn't get into a position where he was perceived as taking sides on anything.
Okay. Let's kind of move on a little bit then. In terms of who hires and fires staff, I assume that you have hire and fire authority over those staff that work for the standing committees. Do you also have hiring authority over the Ways and Means staff, Revenue staff, Council staff?
We have hiring authority over the Standing Committee staff. The hiring authority for Ways and Means is with the Legislative Fiscal Officer. For the Revenue Committees is with the Legislative Revenue Officer. And the Legislative Council has hiring authority over the staff that does the bill drafting and works with the Legislative Council Committee. So we do the standing committees and the interim committees, but the other specific committees, the hiring and firing authority rests with each individual office.
Do those committees each have their own standards for hiring people?
Mr. Chair, they do, but they are considerably smaller operations than ours, and they don't have the number of people that they need to hire every session. They bring in a much smaller number of staff to work. So they don't have to conduct as large of a recruitment as we have to conduct.
But my question is, do they have similar standards to the committee staff that you hire?
Mr. Chair, actually, their minimum qualifications and standards are higher because of the more technical nature of what they do. The fiscal office, I believe, requires an advanced degree in a related field, and I believe the revenue office requires the same thing, whereas we require a bachelor's degree.
Let me ask you a hypothetical then, or maybe not hypothetical. Would it be better if you had all of these staff governed by a central staff director, setting standards for hiring and then making sure that there's accountability for the work they do?
Mr. Chair, that would certainly be an approach. I can't say as to whether that would be better or worse. I think it would depend on how it was managed by that person. In some ways it could be better, in other ways it could be worse.
Okay. Ms. Christopher.
I brought a copy of the session committee administrator minimum requirements and a continuing committee administrator requirements. And both of them require a bachelor's degree, computer skills, and 2 years of experience managing projects or programs involving the creation, implementation, or evaluation of public policy. Mm-hmm. On a session committee administrator, we don't require issue expertise. We're trying to cast that net broad. As Dave said, we'll typically see 200 applications, and we want to put as many qualified applicants in front of the committee as possible. So we don't ask for issue expertise. On the continuing committee administrators, the desired skills and education are expertise in a specific issue area as demonstrated in professional experience, strong research skills, and the ability to use a variety of reference materials, communication skills with interpersonal team, large groups. So you get more into the research aspect on a continuing committee administrator. This is more administration of the session committees.
Okay.
And then we always have the caveat, an equivalent combination of education and experience sufficient to demonstrate ability to perform the duties of the position may be considered. Because different chairs are looking for different qualifications in addition to the minimums.
Let me ask while you're here another question. I assume that in the different staff offices they also do the firing if necessary. Do you help them with that kind of issue where they run into a performance issue as a human resources officer for the legislature?
Chair Latimer, it depends.
let me ask it this way. Are all the staff directors subject to Oregon labor law and court cases and other reviews that take place when you're a public administrator? It's not easy.
The legislative branch is exempt from FLSA, but generally speaking, yes, they are required to follow all employment laws.
Okay. So they might be a good idea to seek your advice if they're having problems with a poor employee?
Yes. And I would say, generally speaking, for the most part, certainly all of the terminations run through our office because we manage all of the payroll and putting folks on pay and taking them off pay. So we always know of a termination or of a voluntary resignation. And I would say for the most part, I'm involved in the performance-related terminations.
Are personnel files kept in your office or in the various offices?
Chair Latimer. I would say
it depends.
I would say I don't know. Our personnel rules, we have a personnel rule that was adopted by the entire legislative branch, and the personnel rule regarding personnel files says that they should be maintained. It's the agency director's responsibility to maintain the personnel file either in the agency or in employee services. And a prior leadership directed that they be retained in employee services. And so we believe that they are, but
Some offices may have working personnel files.
At least.
But the formal files are kept in your office, supposedly.
I believe they are.
Okay. That's good. Who does performance reviews? In most professional organizations, staff are required to go through an annual performance review.
Mr. Chair, our legislative branch personnel rules require a written performance evaluation for all continuing legislative branch employees on an annual basis. Within legislative administration, those are conducted by either the supervisor or the manager of the employees. And they are all reviewed by the personnel manager and myself before they are administered. I do the personnel evaluations for the managers, and there are two or three other direct hires that I do evaluations for. We can't attest as to written performance evaluations in the other agency offices.
And yet the personnel files are supposed to be in your office? seems it seems to me, knowing a lot about Oregon labor law and hiring and public sector hiring and firing practices, that you've got some risk there then if you don't follow the procedures that are fairly well governed under public hiring and firing regulations. Maybe the committee needs to think about that. In terms of other kinds of professional approaches to hiring and retaining employees, are there issues that you'd like to bring up that you'd like the committee to think about or deal with that we should be thinking about how we might give you some help in providing a professional, well-governed staff for the legislature?
Mr. Chair, there are a couple of things that that come to mind, and we try to work pretty closely with the Assembly on keeping the budgets for the leadership offices up to date. We had the opportunity several years ago to update the position titles and salary ranges and descriptions for the president's office and the speaker's office. And we developed a similar kind of update for the four caucus offices, but that we've never had the opportunity to move forward with that, so that the actual budget for the caucus offices doesn't, the position titles that are in there are not necessarily reflective of the responsibilities of the people in the office. It would be helpful if we could get those updated. So that is something that if the committee wanted to weigh in on that, that might be helpful. We have...
excuse me.
Yes, sir.
Dave. Do you have a classification system for all jobs within the legislature?
Yes, we do.
Okay. What I hear you saying is you have people working out of class.
No, what I'm saying is that the old, I'll give you an example. The caucus administrator is the title of the head person in each of the four caucus offices. In our system, that's a salary range 27. There were policy analyst positions that were created and put in each of the caucus offices several years ago that are a range 34. So we've got situations there where the position of the caucus administrator is seven ranges below the position of a policy analyst in that office. I don't think we need to have a tremendous change in the amount of money going to those offices, but certainly cleaning up the position so that the caucus administrator is perhaps the range 34 or something along those lines, and the policy analysts are a range 30 or something along those lines, I think would help clean up our records and would make the budget more accurately reflect the reality of how the offices are staffed.
Okay. Mr. Garth.
Either of our distinguished witnesses, I'm surprised that you get 200 applicants, and I'm surprised you come up with 50 good ones, given what I perceive to be is not particularly good remuneration for committee administrators, especially when it's not a, for most of them, not a career path. It's a little way station of some type, which may be what they're looking for. Do you have